Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. My name is Ty Hildenbrand. Joining me, as always, from over there in New York City, my good friend and colleague and co-host of many years. We all know him lovingly by his birth name, Dan Rubenstein. Sir, how are you?
I'm good, Ty. I am terrifically well, and I will tell you this right off the bat. I will not make the same mistakes you did, Ty. I will not let myself cause my heart so much misery. I will not break the way you did, Ty. You fell so hard. I've learned the hard way to never let it get that far.
That would be Kelly Clarkson, right?
Good job, Ty. That's what you instantly knew, but good job.
Yeah, ending my two-week drought of getting lyrics.
Yeah, you're a Clark head. Everybody knows that about you. How's life?
Dan, life is good. The weather has turned. It feels like fall.
Yeah.
Football is in the air. It's Halloween weekend. There's a lot of action in week 9, and I am excited to talk about it all with you, knowing full well that really in the thick of the games this weekend, you're going to be at a wedding.
I am going to be at a fall wedding, although I'm going to be in Austin. So in terms of places you must be, and I'm happy to be there. My brother-in-law is getting married. Shout out to Blake and Lisa. If I have to be somewhere, proximity to breakfast tacos and to barbecue and to, I think, pretty decent weather, it's probably better than having to go to like an inn in New Hampshire.
Right,
to me. So I'm happy. And I'm happy that you're feeling all of the pumpkin spices in the air.
I have a follow-up question, though, because this is something we've talked about a lot over the course of our 10 seasons of podcasting now. This is your brother-in-law getting married.
Mm-hmm.
The brother of your wife, how will she feel about you potentially streaming college football at her sibling's wedding?
I think she'll be totally good with it because...
Wow, okay. That's a risky maneuver.
I mean, I've cleared it because I'm not an animal. But
sure.
Brother's a huge sports fan. Nothing but huge sports fan there. Sports fans there. And her parents are enormous sports fans who understand that sometimes there are obligations during big games and you just got to do what you got to do. And there's also a chance that my mother-in-law has some action on some of the Saturday afternoon games. So I'm actually doing everybody a service, keeping people posted.
All right. Well, thank you to everybody for tuning into the show. Don't forget, you can follow us on Twitter, on Facebook. We're on Instagram, all the usual hotspots, including Apple and Spotify and Google Play Podcasts. To all the new listeners who might be stopping by, thank you for spending some of your week with us. I believe this is the best college football weekend of the year because we've got every school celebrating Halloween, which means a bunch of crazy crowd shots of costumes and Halloween-themed headlines.
I assume, is game day in Columbus? I assume they are.
Game day is in Columbus, that's correct.
All right, so we'll see some game day costumes, you know, the cradle of comedy, Columbus, Ohio. Come on through. I'm excited.
On that note, we have breaking news!
Oh, no. I have some regular news, too, but continue.
We received a tweet from our friend Peter, who helps run the Solid Verbal subreddit.
Okay.
It has now officially reached 1,000 subscribers, Dan.
1,000.
One,
what a moment, Ty.
1,000.
And they said we couldn't.
Reddit.com/r/solidverbal is where you can find it if you want to partake in the festivities. I did stop by. You stopped by. You actually were the one who alerted me to this. But a couple enterprising verballers took it upon themselves to run their own Danalytics, quite literally. Mm-hmm. They have listed out every adjective since 2014 that you have used to describe the drum and fife.
It made it so much more real, Ty.
Yeah.
The quivering, the slobbering, the unctuousness of those adjectives made it, it's pretty special that people are going back and combing through the archives. I'm a fan.
What's your real news? That was all I had.
Oh, real news is one, strange Jim McElwain death threats that may or may not exist.
Oh, yeah. Well, I saw, what is that?
That's odd. And let's take this stance right away. never threaten the death of anybody.
Nope,
never
not good.
Do that.
Not good.
But Jim McElwain in an interview said that, and obviously Florida fans have become quite restless with how things are going in Gainesville, especially with the offense. And he said he and family members and players have received death threats. And then the university put out a statement saying, we take such things very seriously, but he hasn't shown us any of it. So we can't really comment on anything specifically. And now Jim McElwain is saying, well, when they become a distraction or more serious, then I will take the proper steps, which okay. is certainly one strategy.
Okay.
What so else? There's that.
What else we
so
got?
So don't threaten people. That's awful. Mike Leach has hired an investigator to dig up dirt on Texas Tech administrators.
Good. He's great.
In an ongoing feud to get back his money that he feels he is owed.
Okay.
So there's that. Maryland's wearing disgusting uniforms. Like, not even creatively weird or meaningful. I mean, I guess they're a throwback situation. They're just... Why?
They're very, like, very yellow. And they're not the only ones. It's an aggressive uniform week.
But it's yellow with like lines above and below the lettering and the number. It looks like a number two pencil. It's very strange.
We've got Illinois going with what it calls a gray ghost against Wisconsin. They're all grays. And Ohio State also going with grays against Penn State. They're also calling for a blackout of the stadium, which I regret to say does not look nearly as cool as a whiteout. But... everyone's partaking in this whole color fest on Halloween weekend.
What's tough with the, and listen, 0-12 teams should be able to wear and should go for it uniform-wise, just like Alabama, just like whoever. Alabama doesn't, but it is strange when there could not be less excitement around Illinois football, and they're like, but wait, we have special uniforms. Like, okay, cool. All right, Illinois. Get better, Illinois. We'd like to see that. Also, did you see the USA Today publish? They do a deep dive into contracts every year.
Okay.
So the big salaries and buyouts has their document, their database has been updated. Did you see any of those?
I thought I saw, and I assumed it must have been a typo, that either Jimbo Fisher or Dabo Swinney, one of the two of them, or maybe both, had buyouts ranging from 39 to 40 million, something like that.
That's correct, Ty.
Wow, is that
million
real?
Between the two of them. Yep.
Holy crap.
Yeah. Now, neither one of them is going to go to the NFL, but certainly there are going to be opportunities that arise down the line that would be intriguing to them, perhaps. Dabo Swinney, 40 million. He makes 8.5 a year. Jimbo, 39, making 5.7 a year. Jim Harbaugh, there's like the weird insurance stuff, but his base salary, or not base, but his contracted salary is $7 million with a $20 million buyout. Chris Peterson, 4.1, which is good, I guess, but a $30 million buyout because he wanted some security there. And of course, Ty, any conversation regarding high, high contract numbers would be incomplete without noting that Kirk Ferentz, $4.5 million for his annual salary and $22 million in a buyout.
There you have it. Shall we get to our week 9 picks?
My floaties are on. Let's dive into it.
Dan, time, help. I need picks of the week.
So you're going to be at a wedding. What time is the wedding?
Late afternoon. So I think it's...
Oh, no!
I know. Not ideal. It'll be... I think festivities kick off at 4:30 Central, and the huge non-window of games, non-window of opportunity games, so closed, blinds, whatever window with all sorts of great games is 3:30 Eastern, so 2:30 Central.
Yeah,
so,
I was going to say, the window of opportunity isn't when you're going to be at the wedding.
No.
That's the worst time. Between 3:30 and 7:30 Eastern time, I think, is really the hot spot for games. I got a handful of really big ones, most of which we're going to get into here.
Mm-hmm.
A middle finger to me in that both Notre Dame and Penn State are going off at the same time like they did a week ago.
What's your watch plan?
I haven't figured that out yet. I haven't figured out which game's going on the big screen, which game's going on the iPad or a streaming device, but suffice to say, I'm going to need a couple of them because those aren't the only two games going off at 3:30.
True. Absolutely. Yeah, you can practice for your Laura Quinn when the playoff features Notre Dame and Penn State squaring off. It's good practice.
I say go out to a sports bar around 5 p.m. at halftime. Get a table.
Okay.
Get some drinks. Watch the second half wherever you're at. And then, you know, see where the night takes you. Depending on the result of the game, stay out, revel.
Make friends.
Stay out, drink away your sorrows, whatever it takes. But 5 o'clock, I think, if you get out, go somewhere nearby, get a table at the bar, get some drinks, enjoy your evening. That's my window of opportunity, I would say. Basically, if we're being honest here, any time that isn't between 3:30 and 7:30 p.m. Eastern time.
So that's basically your change of scenery window.
That's right.
That
exactly.
is your time to get some Cajun tots.
Window. Exactly. Exactly. Okay.
I can live with that.
Saturday at high noon on ABC, we've got Oklahoma State on the road at West Virginia. They are a 7.5-point road favorite. Have you looked at the next 4 weeks in the Big 12, Dan?
Oh, it's going to be terror. It's wonderful.
Oh, it's going to get crazy in the Big 12.
We said this, Ty. The Big 12, early on, we said best TV show in college football.
Totally.
I stand by it.
Totally. It's a November to remember, to say the least. Remarkably backloaded is the schedule with really good games. There are going to be some upsets in there. Even if you're not a Big 12 fan, you should probably watch because it's going to be a lot of fun down the stretch.
Definitely.
Oklahoma State, still alive for the conference. They're still on the fringes of a playoff debate. They need to win out. They need to get some help. But suffice to say, it's possible. It's only week 9. They can start building their case now with a good road win against a plucky West Virginia team. I look at this game. I have trouble picking it. I have trouble picking it outright. I have trouble picking it against the spread because there are just a lot of similarities between these two offenses. Defensively, Oklahoma State is demonstrably better, at least on paper.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know to what degree I can trust that Oklahoma State defense. I feel like we come back to that punchline every year when we talk about Glenn Spencer, and he had a good defense like 5 years ago. And now all of a sudden it's like, is it good? Is it not good? Do we trust the numbers? They're against a good offense. How do you feel?
I feel so many feelings, Ty. So this is what we know. Oklahoma State, this is their second straight road game, and it's a considerable distance road game after they go to Texas, come back to Stillwater. Now they go all the way to Morgantown. The Texas game, certainly a narrow emotional win. They snuck by UT late on the weird interception, which I don't love. I don't love two straight road weeks, especially after a sneak by weird defensive win. Certainly there's a slight body blow theory with how good Texas defense has been playing. But Oklahoma State, their defense came to play as well. The offense of the Cowboys, still great, particularly through the air. The running game has been pretty inconsistent. Defensively, I think they've been fine. I don't think they've been wonderful, but they've been fine. The big thing to me, Oklahoma State is not particularly a mystery. They play pretty good teams kind of closely, and they blow out teams that are clearly lesser. If West Virginia, who is less of a sure thing right now, if they're able to stay with them the first half, make them play 4 full quarters, somehow get better at defending the big pass, which I think is a really bad matchup for West Virginia.
Yeah,
totally. Junkyard Jim over there. I think they can hang with them. West Virginia just has more questions to me. So I think it's another Oklahoma State sneak by, even though Morgantown is tough. I'm going to take the points. I have Oklahoma State here 31-28.
How about this for a prediction? There are going to be a lot of points and yards. It's going to be a shootout in Morgantown. David Sills, Junkyard Jim, they're going to combine for like 5 touchdowns. Whoever has the ball last wins this game. What is my golden rule of shootouts, Dan?
Just grab those points.
Just snag them.
Storm
Don't
away.
Even think twice. Yeah, grab the points. Take them in a shootout. I think a back and forth fun game if you like points and offense. Oklahoma State wins on the road 42-38, but West Virginia covers 7.5.
You like weird number things in the sport, right?
I do.
Your rule of 19 or whatever that is, just that you just like that.
Yeah, I do.
So I picked this game and I said Oklahoma State 31-28. And then I swear to you, this is true. I looked at West Virginia's schedule one more time to make that one over. West Virginia has now lost twice, correct?
Mm-hmm.
To Virginia Tech and to TCU. How many points did those teams score? In wins. No fun 31.
Whoa.
Each time. I'm just saying.
Wow.
I have nothing to say. That's just, it's a weird coincidence. That's all.
But it rhymed with 31. That was great.
No fun 31.
Provocative. Okay. Mm-hmm. Moving on. Saturday at 3:30 on ABC, TCU, 6.5-point favorite on the road at Iowa State. Dan, how you feeling about this game?
Another team, by the way, Ty. And I don't know if we're going to come up with, we don't need to brand everything, but in the way that NC State is able to take advantage when cracks are shown, Iowa State, kind of in that same mold. Maybe like a Utah in the Pac-12, you show a little bit of weakness, Utah's going to find it. They may not win 10 games every year, but they're going to find it. Iowa State is in that mold right now, exposing Oklahoma's defensive struggles, Texas Tech's offensive struggles. I'm feeling pretty good about where Iowa State is as a program right now. I just feel a lot better about TCU. So this game could be interesting, but the specific matchup with how well TCU has stopped the run and themselves been so efficient offensively and getting the ball to so many weapons, and Kenny Hill has been so new, Kenny Hill. I don't think it's an LRO situation, luck running out. I just think TCU is considerably better, are playing at a better level right now. I think they're a couple touchdowns better. I have the Frogs 30-16.
Yeah, you know, this is a creepy little spot here for TCU on Halloween weekend.
Forgot about that.
Yeah, they're unbeaten. They're creeping up in the polls. The next 4 weeks are really difficult.
They're in the polls. They're number 25. This is ridiculous.
I know. Before the year, we looked at this one and we said this is a gimme. I don't think anyone's considering Iowa State a gimme. They're 5-2. They're playing well. They won with defense, of all things, at Iowa State a week ago against Texas Tech. This is a pretty good team. They beat Oklahoma on the road. What's interesting about Iowa State is, for as much as we talk about David Montgomery and the Duke of Hazard, Alan Lazard, of course.
And we do not stop talking about David Montgomery. That's
never.
Who we are.
This isn't a particularly efficient offense. What they're good at is winning field position. They're good at turning you over and getting points if they make it inside your 40, but they're not efficient. There's a lot of headroom there to grow and mature as an offensive unit. That might happen next year or later this year under Matt Campbell, but I think this is the game where that lack of efficiency catches up with them. TCU, I think, can take away the Iowa State running game. I think they can pressure Kyle Kemp into making some mistakes. I think it's ultimately their run defense, which changes the complexion of this game and has an impact. So TCU wins on the road and covers 38-27.
Fair enough.
Saturday, 3:30, CBS. We've got Georgia, a 14-point favorite over the Florida Gators. They call this one the world's largest outdoor cocktail party. They played at Everbank Field in Jacksonville. I can't remember the last time a line was this big in a rivalry game such as this. Quite honestly, the only reason it's on our list here of headliners is because it is such a historic rivalry that we celebrate and like to talk about each and every season on the Solid Verbal. When you see 14 points, how does that make you feel, Dan?
I'm glad you asked, Ty. It makes me feel as if I want to search for a reason why Florida can keep it closer.
Me too.
It's that search.
I'm worried about that search because I've been searching ever since Sunday night when we started looking at this slate, and I'm probably going to do something crazy here in a few minutes, but I just I wanted to ask you first to get your feelings and just kind of, I don't know, be my sounding board.
Yeah, and okay, so here's what we know. Ty, definitively, Florida's defense has been pretty good recently against LSU and Texas A&M. They've improved versus the run after not looking terrific. We know that there are too many inconsistency issues on offense, to say the least, but it appears that they're getting Tyree Cleveland back, which seems important because if they're going to hang in this game, it will be because Felipe Franks incrementally keeps getting better. And the Florida offense falls behind the sticks less often, which is what they've been doing. So there is an element of that, maybe popping some big plays, which is what Felipe Franks does sometimes, occasionally. Georgia-wise, I mean, we know the defense is outstanding. We know their offense is all right. Still not particularly efficient. They can get the big plays off at a better rate than Florida does. They have skill talent all over the place, but they do rely on those, which, Ty, good for Jake Fromm against a Florida team that gives up too many big plays. Mm-hmm. That's a nice matchup right there.
Yeah.
And Georgia and Florida, Georgia to a slightly better extent, are outstanding at finishing drives. They're really good in the red zone. Florida does not get there as often as Georgia does, but to look at this game and think it's going to be a pure defensive struggle perhaps overlooks the fact that these two teams, they put up points in the red zone, be it three, be it seven. It is something that should at least strategically play a wrinkle in this game. So I like this matchup a lot, but I could not find, Ty, for the life of me, I don't love Georgia's corners on every snap, but that it's such nitpicky nonsense that I love Georgia's linebackers in front so much. I have Georgia here 34-13.
Wow. Okay. I understand that. I do. I kept coming back to this, you know, for as bad as Florida is on offense, they've been in most of their games.
Yeah.
Michigan and Vandy, those are the two outliers, but look at the rest of their games. Tennessee, Kentucky, LSU, A&M. All those games were close, man. And they're not good on offense at all, but they're weirdly good at doing just enough to keep it close.
Okay.
And in a rivalry game where...
Gotta throw them out, Ty.
I do believe you throw them out regardless of record. You just have to blindly toss them out the window. In a game like this, I am intrigued by that matchup. Because I don't know if Florida can move the ball on Georgia. I have a sneaking suspicion they can't. But I don't know if Georgia can run on Florida because they have improved defensively mm-hmm. against the run. What if, humor me, what if Jake Fromm, Jake's superior, whatever you want to call him, what if he is forced to throw the football?
Yeah.
What if they can't get the kind of effectiveness they're used to on the ground and they need to rely on him? What does that game look like? How does that change the complexion here? I am very tempted to go Florida outright. And I know that that's totally, totally crazy.
Wow.
But I kept coming back to the fact that Florida is in a rivalry. They've probably been looking forward to this game for a while. They're good at keeping it close enough.
Yeah.
It would not surprise me if they won, to be honest. I don't think it happens, but I do like them to cover.
Lock of the week.
And I'm just going to get crazy. I'm going to lock up Florida plus 14 in the world's largest outdoor cocktail party. Big rivalry.
Say the word outright, Ty. Say it.
I might come back to it. I might get crazy,
outright.
But for right now, I'm not going to.
It's a good point, though. The Jake Fromm factor of him having to win this game over the course of four quarters, if Florida keeps it close, he, between the Notre Dame game and the Mizzou game, did not throw it more than 15 times in any of those games. In the Mizzou game, which was weirdly close early on, he ended up throwing it 26 times, but he's only thrown it 25 plus times twice, and it was in those two games this season. So we really don't know, and that Mizzou game wasn't a game late. We don't know how to what degree we can count on Jake Fromm having to go 24 of 37 and come up with a game-winning drive with 2:07 left.
The problem with my theory is that Georgia has been ripping off the arms and legs of teams that they've yeah. played, with the exception of Notre Dame. So we'll see. I don't know. I'm curious. I can envision a scenario in which Florida wins this game outright.
Yeah.
Also at 3:30 on NBC, Notre Dame, 1 week after their big win against USC in primetime, they're back at home. They are a 7.5-point favorite against visiting NC State. All of a sudden, Dan, all of a mm-hmm. sudden, like a vision up in the sky, an apparition on Halloween, whatever you want to call it. All of a sudden, it just appears that Notre Dame is this playoff contender. People were talking all week.
Yeah.
Big win against USC. Maybe Notre Dame is better than advertised. People started writing them off after the 1-point Georgia loss. Turns out Georgia's pretty good, right?
It does turn out, yes.
Meanwhile, NC State has just been sitting at home licking their chops. They've been howling at the moon like a good wolf pack does, waiting to go on the road and assert their claim as one of the elite teams in college football this year. Remember, they've only got one loss all year. It came in week one. So far, they've looked pretty good.
Not a great loss. I'll, you know.
Not a great loss by any stretch.
Yeah.
But it was early. Ryan Finley still has yet to throw an interception. Their front seven on defense is mobile, agile, hostile. They got Bradley Chubb. I am fascinated by this matchup on all fronts.
I think it's reasonable to be fascinated by this. I feel like I'm right there with you. Here's what I ask you about NC State specifically before we get into Notre Dame. Do their wins look as good as they felt when it happened?
No.
So Louisville has subsequently lost. So they lost, Louisville did, at NC State on a Thursday or Friday night. It was close, but it ended up being a couple touchdowns after, I think, a late pick six. And then Florida State certainly does not have the luster that it did at the time. So NC State, like good teams do, are able to take it to teams that are showing cracks. Reasonable?
Yeah.
They beat Syracuse by, I think, a score. They beat Pitt comfortably. But Notre Dame, it seems to me, is a level above. And they're going on the road. Now, granted, for Notre Dame, a week after an emotional win, not emotional win that it came down to the last second, but I think a big relief for the Irish that they really have arrived. They're able to distance themselves from a pretty good team.
Sure, sure.
It's an impressive showing. Notre Dame's offense is not really a sort of chug-along offense. They're not going 5, 6, 4, 7 yards at a time. You know, maybe they'll run for 2 yards and then rip off a 17-yard run. Brandon Wimbush might have some accuracy issues, but then complete a ridiculous out pattern for 31 yards. That kind of offense, right? Fair to say?
Totally.
So really great at generating big plays. They're unbelievable in the red zone. A huge step forward from where they were last season offensively. And NC State is just sort of all right at everything, which is a good thing to be. Don't get me wrong. The defense gives up too many big plays, which is a bad matchup against Notre Dame. But if NC State is going to win this game or keep this game close or give themselves an opportunity to win this game late, it will be because they're able to control the ball offensively, most likely through the air. And it's that Ryan Finley factor. Notre Dame's defense can't get off the field on 3rd and 4, stuff like that. But that's a lot of buts.
It's a lot of buts. Too many buts.
Ty and I, we don't get us wrong. We love lots of buts.
Lots of buts.
But, and there's another one. I don't know if I love having to qualify everything.
No.
NC State had a week off, and it could be a letdown spot. Notre Dame's favored by what? What's the latest?
Seven and a half points.
Yeah. I think I'm going to go with the home team that can run the ball well and force a team to be one-dimensional offensively. I'm going to go with Notre Dame by a couple scores here.
Okay.
I'm feeling something like 28-17.
Okay, so
that's
lower,
reasonable.
Lower scoring than I might anticipate.
Yeah, I think Notre Dame's defense is going to be able to hold the Wolfpack down a bit. 28-17 in that range.
Well, I'm mildly terrified because of the letdown factor. I don't know how much of that will creep in here, but big home win, prime time over USC. I could see a slow start for Notre Dame. And beyond that, what worries me is...
And they've been a fast-starting team.
Yeah. Absolutely. What worries me beyond that is what the matchup looks like between their rushing offense and a really good front seven for NC State. Really good front seven. It's going to be a war up front. I think Notre Dame has the edge there. But it will be interesting if there's a little bit of a hangover from a week ago, and NC State comes out and is able to kind of curtail that attack. I don't think they're good enough to completely shut down Notre Dame. They are, however, definitely good enough to change Chip Long's game plan. And I think that's where the real opportunity lies for Brandon Wimbush. He can connect down the field with guys like Equanimeous St. Brown, Chase Claypool, Alize Mack, maybe the coolest name in college football. I think that could be the difference in this football game. Not so much NC State totally shutting down Notre Dame's rushing attack, but maybe keying on it so much that Brandon Wimbush has a chance to look down the field and connect on some bigger throws. I would also encourage everyone to that end to go on out and read what Ian Boyd wrote on SB Nation about how the Notre Dame offense works and how it centers around the running game, how that opens up the pass and whatnot. It kind of plays into this whole theory. I don't want to blindly dismiss NC State's offense either. I mentioned Ryan Finley.
They have a couple important weapons.
Yeah, I mean, I mentioned Ryan Finley hasn't thrown an interception, but Nyheim Hines has grown into a really solid running back. Jalen Samuels, the all-world whatever H-back, leads the team in receptions. They're better throwing than running, but they're still really balanced. And especially in a game like this where there could be a hangover, again, hypothetically, a really balanced attack is something that kind of scares me. USC was supposed to have that balanced attack, but they didn't really show it. NC State, I think, is probably better than USC at this point. And having that balance a week after a big game is something that mildly terrifies me. I agree with you that Notre Dame wins. I think more points. As is typical, though, I have to say that NC State covers the spread. So I'm going to say 38 to 31 Notre Dame wins. Wow. NC State covers.
That's a lot of points. So you like the over no matter what.
I think Notre Dame starts slow. And I think against all statistical proof thus far, which bears out that NC State gets better on defense as the game wears on, I think Notre Dame will find its way in the second half and ultimately come out ahead by a touchdown.
Do you have a magic number? So we've talked about this in the past with various situations. Brandon Wimbush has not thrown more than 30 times in all of the games he's played, and he missed one except for the Georgia game.
Right.
That was a narrow loss. Do you have a magic number if Notre Dame starts slowly and maybe they have to throw from behind a little bit? They go down 14-3 and the run is just isn't there consistently. If Brandon Wimbush is forced to throw blank number of times, I, Ty Hildenbrandt, become worried.
27.
If he's throwing 27 times, that indicates Notre Dame is sort of off what they should be doing.
I think, yeah.
Okay, reasonable.
Moving on, Saturday at 3:30. This one's on Fox. This is the biggest game of the weekend, let's be honest. We've got Ohio State at home, a 6.5 point favorite against the hated Penn State Nittany Lions. You might recall that last year Penn State won 24-21 in State College after Grant Haley returned a blocked field goal 60 yards for a touchdown.
I do recall, yes.
It feels like an eternity since you and I talked about Ohio State. What have they been up to lately, you might ask?
Somebody got murdered.
Burying teams like UNLV and Rutgers and Maryland and Nebraska. They've won their last five games by an average of 42 points. JT Barrett on the year has a 21-1 touchdown to interception ratio. J.K. Dobbins averaging 7.5 a carry. They are very, very good. And not only that, they had a week to prepare for a Penn State team that just made a statement by drilling Michigan.
And got a good look at what Penn State was going to do against a big name primetime type opponent.
Totally. I would say this. I don't know what your method is for trying to figure out who's going to win and who isn't. If you're kind of on the fence here, don't bother looking at the numbers because they're really not going to help you that much. We know both teams are good. The only thing that I could glean from my Tyo metrics is that Penn State special teams are better than I thought. They're better than I thought. Statistically speaking, they're better than I thought. Last year, that played a factor. But beyond that, the numbers for me aren't really breaking one way or the other. It comes down to matchups. All college football comes down to matchups, but is there anything in particular when you look at this game that you're saying, okay, that's something that I need to watch. That's something that I think favors one team over another.
Yeah, what Penn State, and especially at linebacker, is able to do against Ohio State on the ground, because Michigan ran directly at the teeth of the Penn State defense. And I imagine, whether it's because of Beckmeyer syndrome and the running JT Barrett a whole bunch in a big game, more so than really talented. We've seen, you know, the 1-2 of these Ohio State backs, particularly J.K. Dobbins, has been pretty electric. But how Ohio State maybe tries to test the perimeter and make the linebackers of Penn State go sideline to sideline, which it didn't seem Michigan was able to do all that well. I'm curious about that, because something like that should open up, especially if Ohio State is using sweep motions and stuff like that to get the linebackers' eyes all over the place. That should open up the passing game, which is something we haven't really seen with much success downfield for Ohio State in these bigger games with JT Barrett these past couple seasons. So that, to me, I mean, it isn't a specific number, but that is a specific matchup that I think I'm most interested in, because, yeah, you're right. Ohio State has been playing games where you just sort of see the score on the bottom line and say, yeah, that makes sense. You don't really have a need to watch Ohio State, Nebraska, or Rutgers, or Maryland, or whoever they've been playing, because you knew that this stretch was going to be here, and all that really mattered was what they were able to do against these top-flight teams. Penn State, obvious letdown factor, going to a hostile place after a big emotional win, you know, a revenge spot last week against Michigan after losing the way they did last year. Ohio State, you can throw on them more so, it seems, than you've been able to throw in Ohio State teams in the past, which is the proper context, I think, because their defensive and their front is still so ridiculous. So
yeah,
Penn State, their defense has looked nothing short of outstanding. Have they even allowed a point in a first quarter yet?
No, they're the only team, like the only team in FBS college football that has yet to allow a point. I think they've outscored opponents 90-0 in first quarter so far this season.
Yeah, so it's a game that's going to come down to me to moments. You know, on third and four, is Penn State able to keep a drive going? Are they creative enough play calling wise to sort of find the little, you know, the holes in the Ohio State zone, whatever stuff like that? Because Trace McSorley had kind of a garbage game against the Buckeyes last year, right?
He did. Yeah, totally.
It was not McSorley who won them that game. So I do have concerns. I am actually, and this goes against every muscle fiber that I have in my brain, which is, I don't even know if there are muscle fibers in your brain.
Probably not.
I'm taking Penn State here.
Yeah.
I have not seen a JT Barrett game against a huge opponent that I feel particularly confident about. I'm going Penn State here, not just to cover. It's what, a 7-point spread?
Yeah, 6.5, 7.
Six and a half, seven.
Somewhere in there.
I am right now feeling better about the readiness of Penn State. I'm not locking it up because that would be ridiculous.
That'd be crazy.
But the Lions win here 23-20.
Okay. I could see that. You talked about Penn State's linebackers against Ohio State. Let's talk about Ohio State's linebackers against Penn State's offense. Penn State runs a spread, but they do a lot of RPO stuff, run pass option. And what that translates to is a lot of pressure on linebackers. They got to play disciplined, because if they don't, if they overcommit, that's sort of what opens things up for Trace McSorley, both as a runner and as a passer. You mentioned McSorley didn't do a whole lot through the air last year, but he led Penn State in carries and he had a big touchdown late.
True.
He was able to get something going on offense, just not in the deep state fashion that we grew accustomed to late in the year.
Such a great name.
It's the best name. Mm-hmm. So my point there is, watch Ohio State's linebackers to see if they're able to play their keys correctly, prevent the big plays on the ground through the air by Penn State. That's the first thing.
Okay.
The second thing that I'm going to watch is, and you alluded to it, the Ohio State defensive line against Penn State's offensive line. That's what I'm most concerned about if I'm a Penn State fan. It should not be overlooked that Penn State's offensive front had trouble with Northwestern.
Yeah.
I know they won that game, but I'm telling you, dog, if you watched it, they did not look good, and it was freaking Northwestern.
Who you calling dog?
They were fine last week against Michigan. I feel like this is a much, much different level of a defensive line at this point in Ohio State. They're very, very good. According to Bill Connolly's numbers, Ohio State's defensive line creates the most havoc of any in the country. I think that is the issue for Penn State here, and that is what most concerns me. That said, I'm going to agree with you. And
ooh,
I'm going to harken back to something that our friend David Jones said over at PennLive.com. If you look at what Penn State has done in the past against Ohio State in the Horseshoe, it has not been a pretty picture at all.
I was at one of those games, Ty, in 2008, maybe? It was real low scoring and very bad to watch.
Totally. But his point is that this is the first time in an eternity where Penn State goes into the Shoe with a swagger. And that stands for something in college football. So what'd you say, 23-10?
23-20. No, I think it's real close.
Oh, 23-20. What am I saying?
I trust Trace McSorley late more so than I trust JT Barrett.
Well, let's get nuts and say 24-19, Penn State.
Ty, do you know where that Penn State swagger comes from? The Fordham Rams, obviously.
Yeah.
It's undeniable that Penn State did not have an identity until New York's one true team, the Fordham Rams, gave them benevolently Joe Moorhead.
Yeah, they didn't find that identity until about a couple weeks into the year, until that Minnesota game a year ago after they lost by 39 to Michigan, went to overtime against Minnesota. But from that point forward, the whole script flipped on them and they've been lights out ever since, haven't lost in the regular season.
True.
Good game. I'm excited. We'll see. I'm going Penn State outright, and that's out of no disrespect to Ohio State. This is an incredible team. Incredible team. But I got to go with my heart. I'm going to go Penn State.
Yeah. Fair enough. Okay.
Other semi-important games that we should at least discuss here a little bit. We've got Michigan State -2 on the road at Northwestern, Dan.
Mm-hmm.
I looked at the schedule. I pored over it very intensely.
Don't do that.
This is probably the most boring Big Ten game since Northwestern's last football game.
Oh, you know that's not true, Ty. I mean, this game might be boring, but there's an Illinois, there's a Maryland, there's a Rutgers, there's boring quotients. There's Iowa.
I don't know. Let's go Michigan State minus the points here.
I'm going to go Michigan State.
Also at 3:30 on Saturday, we've got UCLA at Washington. This is an alarmingly high point spread, Daniel.
It's also alarmingly early for the Pac-12.
Alarmingly high. It is 17 points in favor of Washington. They're at home. A beefy point spread. How do you feel?
I feel like UCLA has done very little to get away from the fact that they are the cure for the common offense, which Washington had against Arizona State. So I'd be very appreciative if you dropped the plop, plop, fizz, fizz for me.
Plop, plop, fizz, fizz. Oh, what a relief it is.
Yeah, that feels right.
Yeah, so I think Washington gets it going on the ground. UCLA, as we've seen, you know, granted it was a very limited Oregon offense, but elsewhere early on against Texas A&M, we saw what Khalil Tate did against UCLA. I firmly believe even with Washington having its own injury struggles, Trey Adams, their left tackle's out for the year, they're down a couple corners against Josh Rosen, which is never a wonderful thing, but I think Washington controls this game. UCLA is, it's just too far to go on defense. So I think Washington gets back on track. Something like, I don't know, 42-20.
All right. I agree. Saturday at 7:15, Mississippi State, a 1-point road favorite at Texas A&M. My question for you, do you doubt Nick Fitzgerald again, Dan? Do you doubt him again? Do you have the audacity to doubt Nick Fitz?
Yeah, I mean, what he did against them last year just is enough to make me feel bad.
I'm going to go ahead and doubt Nick Fitzgerald this week, actually.
Okay.
I like Kellen Mond more. I think A&M has too many weapons. They're at home. A low point spread here. I'm not sure this is a close game. I like Texas A&M to win pretty handily at home.
I feel like it's going to be pretty close. Texas A&M, though, is in a spot that I always like picking a week off. Coming off of a, you know, a bye week, having a pretty good defense, playing at home as a dog, I think I'm going to go A&M here. And I understand that Mississippi State should be able to move the ball. They have a history of moving the ball against Texas A&M. But I think Kellen Mond, with another week to get reps, I'm going to go Texas A&M here by 7-10. Something like, let's call it 34-24.
Saturday at 8 p.m., Georgia Tech at Clemson. Clemson, a 14-point favorite. We got Clemson favored by a lot here. I think it's justified. I'm curious to see how they handle the option, but I trust in the Clemson defense more than anything else. So I will lay the points and take Clemson minus a 14.
Yeah, we don't know who's starting at quarterback. We don't know the situation. Kelly Bryant has been cleared from concussion stuff, but still has a pretty tender ankle, apparently. So if it's Zarek Cooper, that might not be great. Didn't look fully that good against Syracuse, which is worrisome. I'm going to go Clemson here. I think defense, special teams, they should be able to run the ball, even though they're not particularly efficient. I do like Travis Etienne, Tavian Feaster, et cetera, et cetera. I think they're going to be creative enough to win this game. So give me Clemson, but I'm worried about the quarterback situation. Something to monitor.
Saturday at 8 p.m., we got Texas Tech, a 20-point underdog at Oklahoma. Dan, I got to bring this up.
Oh, look at that sandwich. I'm so hungry.
Oh, boy.
This might not be a true letdown look-ahead sandwich game, but
okay,
emotional road win over K-State for Oklahoma. They saw their playoff hopes flash before their eyes. Next week, they got the Bedlam game on the road, nestled in between a pesky little Texas Tech game. I don't think Tech's good enough to win this game, Dan, but I don't think Oklahoma's defense is good enough to maintain a 20-point lead, a 20-point line in this game, where you know Texas Tech is going to come out firing. It's sort of like their national championship. So I'm going to take the points here in a potential shootout. Texas Tech plus the 20.
So here's the thing about Oklahoma. I don't think Vegas has really figured out the Sooners. It's like they're 1-5 against the spread recently, which is fine. It's not up to Oklahoma to make spreads, but the inconsistency largely because of defense has been the reason behind that. I'm going to take Tech in the points. It feels a little bit shootouty that Oklahoma, you know, maybe it's a backdoor cover or something like that, but Oklahoma should win by 10-14. So I'm going to say 44-31. Oklahoma gets it done. They don't cover in this game. I'm curious to see what Texas Tech looks like at quarterback. This is a real name, McLean Carter. It is very much a Texas Tech quarterback name. Yeah. Is the backup as of this moment. Nick Szymanek has struggled a bit recently, so we'll be interesting to see what happens there. But I'm taking OU here just because I don't know if we can fully count on Tech right now.
And then the nightcaps in the Pac-12, so-called yes. Pac-12 after dark, if you will. We've got Washington State, 3-point favorite on the road at Arizona. There could be a ton of points in this game.
Oh, yeah.
Arizona does not bother with defense. They can't be troubled for that. But they've gotten a hell of a lot better since fully committing to West Coast Lamar Jackson, Khalil Tate. Have you noticed that he has started to bubble up on some Heisman lists? We are responsible for this. I mean, he's ultimately responsible for it, but we are doing everything we can to sort of nudge him along.
Yeah. And so Arizona wins last week in, one or two overtimes. Our buddy Yogi Roth was on the call, 45-44.
Yeah.
On the road at Cal, coming back home to the desert, Washington State. That's a faraway trip, Ty. Going from Pullman to Tucson is, I don't know if that's the farthest distance between Pac-12 schools, but it certainly, in my dumb head, sounds like it. I really want my pick to be Washington State. I like their defense. Arizona is a little LRO to me just because all of a sudden they have this revelation at quarterback who's running for 200 yards a game. And it's a pace that I don't think anybody can keep up unless he really is, in fact, Lamar Jackson. But the fact of the matter is he didn't win the job outright during fall camp. And that worries me a little bit that he may have a clunker in him against a very, very good defense in Washington State. But if I'm going to believe such a thing, I should think that the line would be a little bit higher. That Washington State, coming off of a couple of impressive wins this year, you know, beating USC the way they did. I hate the travel, though, Ty. I hate that the fact that they're going this far, they're playing that late, they're sitting around all day waiting. I guess it's only 6:30 on the West Coast. I think I'm going to take Arizona. I think their defense is feisty enough to get to Luke Falk enough. They'll be able to generate a couple of big plays on the ground. I think they keep the train rolling. It's just a bad life matchup for Wazoo. I'm going to take Arizona outright.
I agree. I think Khalil Tate takes the next step in his Heisman candidacy. Big home W here, 55-52 in Pac-12 after dark.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally, the late game, 10:45. If you stay up to watch this game, God bless you. USC, also a 3-point road favorite at Arizona State. Dan, I'm going to stick to my guns here. I am going to say body blow theory in play.
Interesting. For whom?
Body blow theory in play for USC a week after getting pushed around by Notre Dame.
Second straight road, yeah.
ASU has come on like a freight train. The defense looks for real. I'm going to take them outright at home. I think a big week for both Arizona schools at night.
So do you think, okay, so Notre Dame is a team we've established as being very good, most likely in our minds. Notre Dame beating the teams the way they have now, including USC, they're most likely very good.
Correct.
Right?
Correct.
USC loses to a very good team, but they themselves have talent on both sides. They're beat up on defense. The receivers have not come through like I think a lot of us imagined they eventually would, with a good quarterback who had finished the year as strongly as USC did last year. If USC loses at Arizona State, and they're only favored by, what, a field goal?
Three, yeah.
Three and a half points. It almost seems like we're back at a wheels are coming off in the desert point with USC. USC won the Rose Bowl, and now they're only favored by a field goal against a team that seemed like they were heading in a really poor direction. Arizona State turns it around. I think we're, and I know it's late, but it's not much travel for USC. It's like a 45-minute flight. It's not terribly far. I think we may be undervaluing USC just a little bit. I think so. I think if they stay simple, if they run the ball well, I know they're beat up along both lines. I still feel like there's some undervaluing going on. I'm going to take USC outright to win this game by about 10 points.
You're going to regret the day you said that. I'm going to pull that audio out. I'm going to play it.
I'm willing to admit when I'm wrong, Ty, because it's the thing I do best.
Well, sure. And here's the thing about USC. You're not wrong. And I agree to some extent that they may be undervalued. I still think they're a very, very good football team. I think they might be spent a little bit emotionally after the last couple weeks. It's been a bit of a bumpy ride for them. And much like we saw with Utah, after they lost two big games back to back, it's not too far beyond the realm that they would just lay a stinker here.
And they've been sort of underwhelming on the road, just in general.
Yeah. I don't know. We'll see. I'm going to go ASU outright. I think they win this game. I think they continue their own momentum. This is a really big game for them. Maybe the biggest on the schedule.
Yep.
All right. So it's at this point in time, before we talk about the Friday 8 p.m. game between Florida State and Boston College, that we take the bubble wrap off another installment of what we're calling the Adam Amin voice meal of the week. Adam Amin, talented broadcaster, noted verballer.
Mm-hmm.
From ESPN, he will be calling the Friday night game as he does typically on a college football week. He gets things started and has called some really fun games so far this year. Florida State -3 at Boston College is a game that you and I should probably discuss here. But before we do, the voicemail will plunge into the depths that is Boston food. Have a listen.
You're doing it, Adam Amin. You're playing with us. You're leaving us a voicemail.
Historic. Rustic. Pilgrimy? I feel like these words are accurate and or not real words to describe the clam chowder rich landscape of Boston College's Chestnut Hill. This week, Mac Brown returns as my partner in a one-night reunion show for the ages, and we'll venture into Boston's North End, the city's oldest residential community that was settled all the way back in the 1630s. And, of course, it's one of the nation's premier Italian food destinations. We'll honor the old-world tradition by eating at a place that ends in a vowel. Looking forward to stopping by Strega, one of my absolute favorite spots in this great nation, for an experience authentico. And nothing says authentic like using the word authentico in a super patronizing way. We may also take the time to step into Eagle's Deli, but be forewarned, those with weak stomachs may not want to take the Eagles Deli challenge. I know I sure as hell don't have the physical capacity for such things. Boston College and Florida State on Friday night. Florida State is favored, but by only 3.5? A couple of 40 burgers in a row dropped by BC, and can Jimbo Fisher right the ship against the Eagles? He's 7-0 against them. This has been your Adam Amin voice meal of the week. Stay solid, friends.
Dan, did he say 40 burger?
40 burgers.
I've never heard 40 burger before. I've also never heard, was that Hook? Did I catch Hook in the background there?
I think that was, it was the sweet sounds of Hook. That was what the reference was at the beginning.
You're doing it, Peter.
Yeah.
You're playing with us.
It's a little weird, wouldn't you say?
Oh, yeah. I recorded that, Ty. And yeah, that's shocker. I know, that was me. I recorded that. I was like, I'm going to try to sound like a little kid.
Yeah.
Like one of the Lost Boys. And you will never hear that audio. Because it was me saying, I guess you're about to hear that audio, saying like, you're playing with us, Peter. Wow. Like, it was very bad.
That's weird.
Yep. So that was the better of the two takes.
That would have been the end of the podcast right there.
That's it. That's it. Yeah.
Thank you, Adam Amin. Watch his game on Friday night. It's a good one. A more interesting game than I think we ever could have anticipated. We got Florida State, as he said, a 3.5 point road favorite at Boston College. I'm going to throw caution to the wind and go Boston College here at home at night after a couple 40 burgers. This is probably the biggest game I can remember them playing in a long time, especially now since Florida State looks so gettable.
Yeah, I'm going to take Boston. It's another long travel day situation for Florida State. I mean, I don't know when they're actually getting to Chestnut Hill, but yeah, let's go Boston College here. Their defense has been pretty good. Anthony Brown had a huge week last week. There's something strange about that kind of travel as a home dog when you're on an uptick. Yeah, let's go BC.
All right. Also, very quickly, Saturday at 12:20, just to be different, we've got Louisville -3 on the road at Wake. Dan, I'm going to go Lamar Jackson and the Cardinals. I think they're a little too much for Wake.
Okay. Yeah, I'm going to take Louisville as well here. I think Wake is, you're going to run on Wake a little bit, and Louisville is going into that mode where they're just going to try to get what they can on the ground. And I think Louisville will be all right.
Saturday, 5:45 in the PM, we've got Utah -3 on the road at Oregon. Dan, how are you feeling about your Ducks here at home?
Not wonderful, but better at home with a good defense as underdogs than on the road against a Utah team who was struggling offensively last week, to say the least, against ASU. Even with Tyler Huntley back, they just looked completely off. Oregon, I guess they're slightly improving on offense. Braxton Burmeister, I don't think Justin Herbert will be playing. Darren Carrington's coming back to Eugene, of course, kicked off the team spring, summer, whenever that was, and is now on Utah and their best receiver. Until I see Oregon string together drives over and over again, whatever happens, I am going to take their opponent here. I'm going to go Utah minus a field goal on the road.
Yeah, I'm going to go Utah -3. And then finally,
I would say Oregon's probably 17 to 20 points better with Justin Herbert and a healthy receiving core, but no.
Utah -3 for me. And then finally, 7:30, we've got Tennessee continuing their whirlwind college football road tour here. One week after getting destroyed by Alabama, now they're on the road against a Kentucky team, and Kentucky is actually favored by 4.5. I am inclined to go with the Wildcats here at home.
Yeah, I'm not super enthusiastic about Kentucky football, but I'm super duper not enthusiastic about Tennessee football. I'm going to go with Kentucky here, win by a touchdown. It's like 17-10, sure.
All right, there you have it, a bunch of games. Man, let me count up how many we did. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, I don't know, like 100 games here.
Maybe a solid hundo.
Good week of games. Make sure you're in front of a TV around 3:30. That's when all the biggins are.
Yeah. USF favored by 10 against Houston. Maybe that's interesting. Yeah. Less so perhaps than other years. Colorado State, really like Michael Gallup. They're favored by double digits against Air Force. But outside of that, not a huge week outside of the hugeness of all the games we just spoke of. And I just one quick favorite.
Please, please.
You anything. Know I'm very
anything.
Brief.
Anything for you. You're my friend.
Will you drop that aching, overflowing, surrendering, vigorous drum and fife?
Those were different words.
They were different words.
You did that on purpose. You looked at the subreddit and it creeped you out, didn't it?
It made me up my game, Ty. It made me up my game.
Okay. Cool.
So, let's talk Patriot League. Real quick, three games, all happening at 1 p.m. Colgate hosting Bucknell.
Hold on. Did you say all happening at the same time?
Is that true?
I'm looking at it here, 1 p.m., 1 p.m., 1 p.m., only three games, but this is why they're smarter in the Pat League. They play all the games at the same time so that you don't have teams out there with funny business trying to lose on purpose to screw over other teams in the conference. That's just good, honest Patriot League football right there.
I also imagine there's like a women's soccer game on the field at 3:30.
Stop it.
They got to clear out, Ty.
Stop it.
Colgate hosting Bucknell, and it should be noted, Ty, there will be a Burgundy out.
But what?
There will be a Burgundy.
You made that up. That's not true.
At Colgate. So the crowd is feeling particularly electric, and not just at Colgate, Ty, but in the surrounding town, whatever town that may be.
Yeah.
Burgundy out.
Let's go Colgate here. Give me the Gators. I never pick the Nellies.
I'm going Gators as well here. Fordham, here in New York, here in the Bronx, taking on Lehigh. Disappointing years for both of these teams. But Ty, here's where I feel like the game changer is happening. There is going to be a maroon out for Fordham. There's going to be a maroon out. Does that change things for you?
I think Fordham is still cowering in the Joe Moorhead-less era.
Wow.
Yeah, they had a good year last year, but now it started to hit the fan. Give me the Mountain Hawks on the road, soaring to victory here.
Yeah, I'm going to take the Engineers as well, just because, listen, we ride with the Lehigh Valley. Even though Lehigh's not my team from the Lehigh Valley,
sure.
Solid wife Kate went there. I just feel good about them. You got married there.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's go Lehigh. Final game tie. The Crusaders of Holy Cross hosting Georgetown, getting the Hoyas away from Multisport Field. And Ty, got to add one more detail here.
Yeah.
There's going to be a royal purple out.
A royal purple out.
There is going to be a royal. That's what the students are saying. There are rumblings right now that there is going to be a royal purple out in this game.
Wow. Well, then give me the Crusaders.
I have to go Crusaders.
You get Georgetown away from Multisport Field, mm-hmm. and you've got the royal purple out thing going on. Yeah.
Sure.
The Crusaders.
Ty, you know what a royal purple out is, don't you? That's an RPO.
Oh, wow.
Don't pick against the RPO. Come on. What are we doing here?
There you have it. That does it for our Week 9 college football podcast. We are called the Solid
Did I give a lock? I don't feel like I did.
I don't think you gave one last week either.
I didn't give one last week. You know what, Ty? Lock up the Georgia Bulldogs for me, please.
Wow. We've got dueling locks here.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Kicking it up a notch.
Let's keep it saucy.
In Week 9 on Halloween weekend.
I'll be in Austin at a wedding on Saturday.
You'll be at a wedding in Austin on Saturday. Don't forget, you can give us a call at 408-VERBAL-1. That's 408-837-2251. That's the Reverb line. If you listen to any of our shows on Sunday, you know that our boy Taylor cuts them up, mm-hmm. mashes everything together into about a 3.5-4 minute clip, puts some music behind it. Gives us a good way to start off the show, take the temperature of what's going on out there in the world of college football. So we'd encourage everyone to do that. If you're not in a position to call, you can always text. I started getting more text messages. I'm trying to reply to them just to kind of keep conversations going and see how people are feeling about the games and all that. But a bunch of different ways you can get in touch with us as you are living in the moment during these games in Week 9. The other thing I would add is if you haven't already, subscribe to our newsletter. We'll send it out Friday afternoon. In that newsletter, I'll be sharing a story that I don't think I've ever shared on the podcast about the one time I tried to take my cousin to a Penn State Ohio State game.
Wow. And this was with your first wife too, right? I guess we haven't talked about your first wife on this show. Kate doesn't even know. That's crazy.
It's news to me as well. All right.
Newsletter of intent. Get in on it. It's a good time.
Also follow us on Facebook, on Twitter, on Instagram. And if you haven't subscribed to the show, do that. And oh, by the way, you can rate or review it as well. Every little bit helps.
I would say also, Ty, to keep your eyes peeled on Facebook and Twitter in particular, for we are going to try to release the second run of our shirts. And I know you've been dealing with people making sure everybody's gotten their shirts from that first run, but we're going to be doing it with our friends from Cotton Bureau. So keep your eyes open for that, because that's also just how they use and work their site. That's a limited time thing. There's a window. We need to sell at least 12. We will sell at least 12.
Yep.
And just pay attention, because it doesn't last forever. And I know next year, Ty, we've talked about, you know, perhaps going back to older designs and just making those available for a window. But this is all we have planned right now. So this is your window to grab one of the new shirts.
All right. A lot to pack into, like, an hour long show here. We appreciate you hanging with us. Please do enjoy your weekend of games. Send us pictures, send us tweets, send us voice messages and text. All the good stuff. Have fun out there. Enjoy Halloween weekend in college football. Week 9 should be fun. Enjoy your week. Enjoy your weekend. For that guy over there, my name is Ty Hildenbrand. Stay solid.
Peace.